Hello and welcome to the talk. I start with Morgan, who sort of set off the kind of subject of the end of post-internet and the sort of break and the sort of understanding of that as a subject. I wanted to start with Gartner and this idea of the trough that we're in at the moment, and this sort of headlong descent that we're having into the trough of disillusionment. And let's start with that as an idea as to why we're heading down this particular slope at the moment.
I don't really know why, but I think as with any trend, you have peaks of the trending, and then you have the dissension, which is when people become disenchanted with the tropes and ideas that once seemed novel but now seem hackneyed. So I think that's why we're going into the trough of disillusionment. So I have to say also, I didn't come up with this. I stole this from Beryl Cooks or Beryl Graham. Well, there's the two of them. It's Beryl Graham and Sarah Cook. That's it. An amazing book where they I first saw this. So props to them for that. But it was basically a way of getting to talk about post-internet as a style. So we're sort of talking about post-internet artists. But I don't necessarily think that our post-internet artists per se is just a style that artists can inhabit for a particular amount of time. In the same way that some artists may have inhabited pop as a style at a specific time and then moved somewhere else once that style was exhausted. And so I felt like I wasn't trying to... I feel it's important not to try to sort of tie down or condemn people to specifically being and remaining as post-internet artists, but as artists who are able to look around in the field and see which suits the ideas and discourses they want to engage with at that present time. And the idea was that post-internet art was kind of exhausted, that it did have a lot of interesting possibilities for critique, maybe indirect and oblique critique, and also ways of ushering in the web into the art world, because it's taken about 15 years. Actually, it's taken about 60 years. No, yeah, well, no, about 50 years, let's say from the 60s onwards, to get technology into the art world and be seriously discussed. So it was good at doing certain things, but others it's not so good. And at this particular moment in time, I think it's more its failings are being foregrounded by the sort of difficult financial circumstances we're finding ourselves in, and the bizarre indirect contradictory situations. Now we're all in this art fair, and it costs so much money to get in here. It's kind of ridiculous. It's a bit of a joke. And what? Why? And this is no offence to people in the audience, but it's like, we put on shows and we try and cover different things that are going on in the world, and we struggle to get this amount of people to come and see stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's like, while it's fantastic that we're here talking about post-internet art, I just wanted to say maybe we should stop. Maybe we should stop talking about it. It's exhausting. Let's move elsewhere and talk about different things. So that's the reason why I kind of wanted to draw attention to this style that has existed, exhausted itself, and maybe we should discard it like a shopping bag.
Well, I mean, I was going to pick up on the fact that your current show, in a way, brings together this sort of mapping out of, say, the last 50 to 60 years and how software sort of encountered the art world and how it sort of informed and shaped it. Do you want to talk a little bit about how, for me, the history of, say, technology has influenced artistic practice, and also how, in a way, so like you've got Manfred Moore in your show and other artists such as Cecil B. Evans and Lawrence Leck. Do you want to talk a little bit about that sort of the arc or the way in which these artists sort of you've sort of yoked together?
Okay, so I'm no authority on the history of this, so please don't hold me to any errors I make in doing a canonical survey pricey quickly now. But my feeling is that there's some things that remain, and that is the split between the technological world and the human and sort of world, the sort of humanistic world, which still exists in the art world today, which is the resistance between the resistance to the technological. But one of the other things that kind of still exists is this lack of criticality in terms of what you might term new media works. So there's an organisation called CAS, which is a computer art society, and they had a newsletter. And the thing that they decided to do when they formed was that, hey, we can't really do critical reviews of computer artists because no one else is covering them. The art world has refused them. So we just have to be a supportive portal. And in many ways, Rhizome has the same modus operandi. I've sat in meetings with the two of Michael Connor and I'm not sure who the main... What's her name again? She used to be at Fact Gallery in... Heather Corcoran. And I said, yeah, Rhizome's amazing, but the one thing it doesn't do is criticize. There's no criticism. And I actually used to write reviews for them. They told me you can't be critical. So I think this is one of the things that hampers new media or internet art, is because it doesn't have that reflex. It doesn't have something to chafe against. There's no resistance. It's just a kind of survey or a description of what the work does, not necessarily if it fails or succeeds. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but that was just something I wanted to put out there anyway.
No, I mean, I was sort of more interested to see where and at what point do you think, because some artists obviously still do critical based work. So you talk about Eva and Franco Matters, and also Cornelio Solfrank and other artists such as that. Do you think, at what point do you think the sort of depoliticized or this sort of depoliticized gesture took place within the...
Well,
sort of...
it goes in waves. So you could say in the early 60s, it was completely depoliticized. That's one of the accusations that's been levied at Yasha Reichart about cybernetic serendipity. Even though that they were being funded by military organizations and corporations, they didn't see a problem with taking this corporate money. And so a writer called Grant D. Taylor, who wrote a book called When the Machine Made Art, asserts that the political comes into sort of new media art through cultural theory. And through so we're talking about the 80s and the 90s. And so people who are surfing that wave also are the first wave of net artists. People who are thinking about transhumanism or sort of Donna Haraway's concept of the post-human. And but then I think, obviously, as Terry Eagleton has written about, you know, theory sort of takes a big downturn. And so in the early noughties, people aren't necessarily that critically engaged. Somebody who's indicative of this condition, I think, is Paul B. Davis. Now, Paul B. Davis is one of the people who was in a crew called Beige Crew with a Corey Archangel.
Yeah.
And they used to do a lot of kind of hacker-type artwork. So that led up to Corey Archangel's hacking of a Nintendo cartridge and making it Super Mario Clouds. And they didn't go into their practice with a critical mindset straight away, but Paul B. Davis stumbled upon a kind of critical awareness when his technique of data moshing was co-opted by Kanye West, and he couldn't do his exhibitions. And he was like, how do I do this? How do I make critically aware internet art or new media art? So I don't know, this is a roundabout way of saying I think the depoliticization happened with the fall of cultural theory or continental philosophy, and the emergence of almost the saturation of popular culture in the World Wide Web. So Web 2.0 and not 1.0, which was like not images or moving stuff, just mainly text. Yeah, sorry, yeah. That's a lot of information.
Yeah, let's bring Richard in at this point, because really we're seeing the commercialization as well, or the sort of... What Richard sort of argues is the moving in of the main, the sort of internet practice into the more mainstream and to, let's say, art fairs such as this, and how that's sort of taken place, and the sort of co-opting of, let's say, the countercultural aspects of the internet, and how that's been sort of branded or rebranded through the market. Do you want to talk in a little bit about how...
Sure. I think initially I'd like to make, at least in my own head, a clear difference between sort of artists who've been working with network cultures, new media art and digital art, and stuff that's being assembled by curators in the market in this sort of bargain bag of post-internet art. Because I mean, the extraordinary thing for me really is to look at, picking up on the point of how long this, you know, stuff that looks like this has been going on, to the blanket indifference of the mainstream art world. So in 1992, Francesca da Rimini had her avatar Gash Girl, who frankly was a sort of edgier and more interesting than Dave. It's just that Francesca never got out of Lamadou, whilst Dave got into the Serpentine.
You're talking about Ed Atkins' work.
Yeah, exactly. So what exactly is sort of going on, not so much within the practices itself, but within the art world's sort of sudden embrace of these practices? And this was suggested by the fact that last year I had the great privilege, the great joy of seeing about four different exhibitions, sort of unexpectedly, in Warsaw, Vienna, other places, all of which were post-internet. And they all look like French pop art. I don't know whether you remember sort of, you know, French pop art from the 70s, but you'd walk in there and there was this sort of exotic clutter. And so this vast amount of exotic clutter with the, rather than pop, you know, and I say French advisedly, because with French pop art there was this feeling that this heaven was actually an American culture that they were slightly outside of. So why is a lot of this stuff reminding me of this? And then that got me thinking, okay, this is sort of interesting because it's now actually linking to a sort of an essentialism, a construction of another, and very importantly for the art world, a generational thing. Because God knows the art world, you know, because the art world likes new branding. It likes new stuff, it likes new meat. And this is a perfect branding. The bits of the art world, the various art worlds have been trying new brands with the same charge that they remember, or we remember from punk, or from, you know, the modernist myths of a new way of seeing for ages. But they had to focus on things like skateboarding, which frankly was never quite going to do it, no matter how many exhibitions, say Jerome Sands put together of skateboarding, it was just a token. But this offers you a break. And what you have, say, is initiatives such as 89 Plus. Why is 89 chosen, this generation? It's both the invention of the World Wide Web, plus the fall of communism, etc., etc., etc. So, whippity-doo, we can make something new. And also, you know, you have this other useful thing, that this, the cultures of the internet, of the web, are seen, you know, by, in a way, the punters, as somehow belonging to a younger generation. Oh, I don't understand computers, I get my 13-year-old nephew to do it. You know, you have this construction, and it's just perfect for branding.
I think what's interesting is the double need, the need for younger artists to get some kind of institutional recognition, but then also, as you sort of say, the, how countercultural, youthful culture, whatever that is needed also by those of, that are in the institutions. You know, it's a two-way need. You know, they want to believe that there is an alternative, as much as, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's also touching, almost, how some of, you know, and I don't want to sort of look at specific practices particularly, only because people don't necessarily choose to be described as post-internet. It's something that is sort of put upon them, you know, rather than sort of signing up for the foreign legion of the new avant-garde of the market wave. But what I do find interesting is how it's some of the stuff that's considered to be such has allowed romantic articulations which I'm very fond of, you know, to sort of come back again. So let's return, say, to instance, to Dave or Ryan Trekartin. When you look at those, say, Walking Around the Serpentine, it is a sort of romantic youth that's being presented within this avatarial thing. You know, you've got the solipsism, you've got the romantic music, you've got Purcell, you've got outsiderness, there's a bit of a skinhead thing, you've got the literary thing. If you look at Ryan Trekartin, you've got Ghosts of Jack Smith, Flaming Creatures, Story of the Eye. It is actually, you know, there is this strand, and it's a very useful and necessary strand of sort of romantic alienation, otherness. But then it's moved so fast now that when you go and, say, see the Ryan Trekartin or one of the stands here, rather than these weird, edgy, scratchy, sort of frantic things, you have photoshopped Paul McCarthy's. You know, it's sort of eaten itself relatively fast, largely because we all want it so much.
Well, I'll bring you in here, Maria, if I may. And you kind of propose a different understanding, I think, in this subject, in that you're trying to, well, you're thinking through object-oriented ontology, and also the kind of rethinking the classical sort of ideas around subject-object divide and through to a more networked understanding of how those things may be considered or understood. Do you want to talk, as we were talking a bit about Ed Atkins, how he may be operating in these terms or...
Yeah, so I'd like to just sort of preface what I'm going to say with a couple of two sound bites in a way. The first thing that I want to say, I mean, I will address your question, is that for me, I mean, I actually don't bother with the term post-internet art. I don't find it useful as for me to think about. I do think it is more of a kind of like, you know, packaging, a sort of art world sort of movement, I guess, because, and then the second thing I wanted to say is because maybe that's, because I'm coming at things from... I mean, I'm still, you know, sort of maintaining some notion of How can we still not be critical? Because I'm not. I think I agree with Bruno Latour, who says critique. I mean, he said in the 80s, and I mean, critique has run out of steam. And I don't know. I think the art world like fetishizes critique, and the equation of art and critique is actually a very modern equation. So I think there's other ways of thinking about practice. So I guess I come from education, really. So I'm dealing with young students who are engaged in practices, and I do think, yeah, there's lots of problems, but I'm trying to think not like jump on a bandwagon, but try to think about how we can think not just simply positively, because that's part of the problem, is all this kind of being positive segue is sort of that neoliberal thing, but more about affirmation, which is a kind of continuation of the if you want, avant-garde legacy of negativity. So that's then so there is, I agree, with a lot of Morgan's and Richard's articles, which I've read, about the kind of depoliticization and this idea of narcissism. But again, narcissism isn't just simply a bad thing. I mean, and that's where I get to the subject-object thing so there's different ways of thinking about narcissism. I mean, it is ubiquitous, but one has to engage in it. Well, I have to engage in it, and I think that the discussions I have with my students are engaging in it, if not using the term narcissism. So narcissism in psychoanalysis has a much more complex relation than simply some kind of consumerist idea about the self. It's very much always related to not just the other, but others, in fact. So then that's been going on a long time in what might be called critical theory. I just call it art theory, even though I don't even like that name either. But and it's interesting that then this object-oriented ontology, really, I mean, I just wanted to investigate that in my article, because I see that as continuing, or trying to say, the post-internet art is object-oriented ontology, the way it's been taken up by in art discourse, or some of it within its philosophical sense, is that, oh, this is new as well. But actually, a lot of what they're saying has been done and going on in a much more interesting way. And these are coming back, Donna Haraway is always being mentioned now all the time, whereas for about 10 years, very few people were, the 1990s are key for me in this, and I think the idea of the generational is very interesting, because, well, so for me, narcissism and this kind of, Ed Atkins then. Now, I mean, Ed Atkins, I think, is a, in my article, I'm only just dealing with one performance that I saw, I'm going to summarize very quickly two things. If my article is about anything, it's looking at, if you like, a kind of a, you could say, a negative path of narcissism, which I'm looking at in Ed Atkins and Mark Leckie. Yeah. However, the distinction that for me is that I can't, that anything that's negative or that might be bound up with these new affects and desires about this dissolution of subject and object are also productive of new relations. So they're simultaneously, to put it quickly, not good and bad, but sort of there's the very thing that is solipsistic can also be productive of actually something potentially interesting, and can move forwards. It's not guaranteed that that's going to happen, and certainly in relation to the previous discussion about how the art world co-opts these things very quickly, and I was interested in Hito Sterl, but now I think her work has fallen into the trough. Well, it's the more that I'm thinking of the actual work itself. It just I was very excited by In Free Fall 2010, and then when I saw that, is The Factory or whatever? I just thought, this is it's swallowed its own whatever. Now, the second thing I just want to say, and then I'm going to stop, is is that then in my article, then I wanted to actually use then, you see, why I don't accept the post-internet thing is because I think that digitalization underlies all production today, and it's not just art. It's like you think about, you know, there are really interesting things happening, not that I'm in, you know, medicine, science, the way imaging is occurring across a broad cultural spectrum. So my final point is that, that artworks, in my article, I was interested in using Hito Sterl as a way of using the artwork itself as the actual practice to kind of show how networked relations are both potentially interesting but also problematic, in that tension that never goes away between materialism and abstraction.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think we're getting there. I think I was thinking more also about, in a way, like, you mentioned the drone and this image of the drone and how it sort of circles over the earth without really, well, it's a dehumanized or, let's say, de-objected object, in that it's sort of scanning a scene without a meat eye, it's a sort of mechanical eye. And can we talk a little bit about how you talk about the de-subjected self and how that sort of operates here in that sort of landscape you're describing?
I suppose, the self. I'm not sure. I mean, understand what you mean by de-subject. I think we're always being subjected.
Yeah.
I guess I was thinking of, like, I mean, George Barber's the Freestone drone. What I found interesting about that film was just because I wanted to use art objects to think through object-oriented ontology, actually, to kind of debunk it in a way, and I think it is about networked relations. See, for me, I'm looking more at film and actual objects than, because I think digitalization underpins them, so I'm not looking at computer or things like that. But the drone is in a network of relations. And the thing is, the network is often very kind of like smooth, and there's no bound, it's endless. You can add more and more things. So I wanted to say that, and then film is always a good kind of, because the way montage and editing works, and that film is also looking at that formally, and that relates to how, so this smooth kind of almost invisible technology has real effects, and these are made apparent by that film without being moralistic, but it just kind of shows that there are these kind of interfaces. So there's always the subjectivity, there's always the subject, but it's not the subject as something outside of a network of relations. But ultimately, in the article, my soundbite was that relations can kill, because I think there's too much in a lot of writing around relations. It's too celebratory and like Ian Bogost. Latour, and then with the Ed Atkins performance, you could just add more and more. And Mark, it's very, you know, cosmological.
Yeah.
You can just add more and more stuff, really. But actually, you can't. You know, hang on a minute. What about, you know, the real?
Morgan, do you have anything to add at this point?
I was kind of thinking about the idea of narcissism and stuff, and. In a way, it's not really a response to what you're saying, but it just made me think a bit more about what I was thinking about here. And it was a sort of, maybe a selfish impulse to say, well, narcissism is seductive, right? It's a seductive area to contemplate, but in a way, you sort of want people to look up from the pool and out at reality. And so they have that saying, something that's apotropaic, and they talk about these sync patterns that trap you in them. So you contemplate them and you're stuck. And sometimes I think a lot of theory and abstract theory is a bit like that. So you can get stuck in the beauty of contemplating it. And while you're doing that, the real world is falling apart around you. And I think that's not something I would like prescribe to anybody else, but I think that's underpinned a lot of my thinking within this piece. And and a reason to kind of dismantle post-internet art, whether it is fictive or reality. And also, to, because one of the things that I think is really interesting is that, again, to talk about this critical attention being paid to the contemporary field, and also to talk about the subject. So I'll just split them off quickly. But one of the things is, like, what is the contemporary subject? So we can talk about, like, a network of relations, but, like, in the real world, how do I feel as a contemporary subject walking through the world? I don't... Yes, I'm in a relational totality of equipment, as Heidegger would put it. Like, there's this exists for me to pick up, this chair exists for me. But I'm also... I don't have any money to pay my rent. People are abusing me on the underground. The government is trying to privatise public space everywhere. You know, my sister lives in a council flat that the government is tearing down and is going to move her somewhere. These are real concrete situations that need to be dealt with in a robust, concrete way.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I guess what the other criticism levied at post-internet art was that it performed this thing that Hal Foster talks about called mimetic exacerbation, which is the idea of just like copying some of these exploitative tropes and then exhibiting them as work. And that them... just exhibiting those tropes like equals critique.
Yeah.
And I still believe in critique. I still think criticism in writing and in art is important, but not necessarily the only thing that's needed. But I think it's just like one of the few areas left in life where you can have an oblique, an indirect sort of interaction with these forces of subjection that are happening around us. So, for instance, last year in universities, they were getting rid of humanities courses and we had all those occupations. And it's precisely because the government is reducing spheres for, like, expanded thinking. So, in a way, maybe it's important for us to say, like, hey, hang on a minute, what is it? It's interesting, isn't it? Like, in this time where spaces to think complexly about things and directly engage in a political way are being reduced, that a really popular art form is one where, similarly, that is reduced as well, you know? So I think I think it's important to sort of keep that in mind. That, yeah, I'm not necessarily in relation to what you're saying, but just it was in my head.
Only that in another way, it echoes what I was saying in the sense that when I said, you know, like, hang on, relations can kill, which was the extreme, like, the real, it still needs to be dealt with in some, you know, in some way. So you're talking about, like, the material, you know, those examples, they're all the material, the things that our existence is existing, so to speak.
I'd just like to sort of build out of that a bit, but I think we want to be careful in a way about making too clear a division between, in a way, these realms and, in a way, that of the real, because, you know, to riff off the idea of narcissism, you know, the personal is sort of political. And what is interesting is that these very sort of spaces that, you know, we're playing with or playing in are actually also the technologies that are actually shaping, not directly, but are shaping the economic and political environments that are actually, you know, sort of shaping the societies and the politics in which we move. But I also think another thing is going on, which I find actually rather more, which is to do with the idea of criticality, which I find rather more sinister, and it comes back to the point, in a way, of how there is less and less space somehow for, in a way, the political, in for want of a better word, the real, is that the art world has actually become a zoo. It's not become a zoo, it's become a wildlife park, in which ideas and functions and things that used to be out there, you know, like opposition, like revolution, like whatever, it's now as if it's been like some rich people collecting a carpie. These are things that can't somehow survive out there, so it's been brought together in a spaceship. Now, I'm absolutely ambivalent about this. You know, part of me thinks it's brilliant that these ideas have been kept alive in academia and the art world. The other part of me thinks this is just a commodification that's going on, that it's going to empty it. And this is where my real problem with the stuff that's called post-internet sort of lies, because it is sort of... it's a theatre of other, and it's a theatre of whatever. Now, is that good? Is that bad? I don't know, but it's a bit bloody suspicious sometimes.
I guess I would say, like, we're talking about post-internet, but I do... it's dead. It's dead. Like, I think you try... I don't... Yeah. I mean, I know we're talking about it, but it's like...
No, it's dead as a thing. It's dead as a thing. It's not dead as a brand within this.
Yeah, yeah. But this is dead, right? I mean, like...
Yeah.
none of us, I don't know, you know?
Okay, okay. We have to wrap things up here, unfortunately. But many thanks for coming. And say many thanks to Richard Grayson, Morgan Quaintance, Maria Walsh for coming here today. For those interested, you can visit our website where all these articles are online. Also, there is radio shows as well where all these writers will be discussing the same subject. So
please come to Qubit.
And of course.